for the child to reveal darkoi, his or her way of understanding, processing, remembering, retaining, giving back information. According to the verse, I can't begin the chinuch until darko is revealed. So what does darko mean? We might even have to look at a little bit at what does chinuch mean? And even the word na'ar, which also doesn't translate correctly as child or young person. Na'ar does not mean that. We're looking at a language which is perfect. There are no mistakes. Lashon HaKodesh, Biblical Hebrew, requires of us not just to borrow from popular translations. That's very dangerous. We have to look at what does the word mean in its own language, Lashon HaKodesh, and what do Chazal, the mouthpiece of God, Mepia Gvura, the oral law, the Tosh Bal Peh, the Masorah, what do our sages say are the meanings of these words? Because we're going to discover that worlds open up to us and help us readjust how am I meant to look at this child. This child is not the same as every other child. If I have 20 children in my classroom, that means there are 20 classrooms in my classroom. Each child is completely independently different. So quickly, let's look at some of these words. Chinuch, what does chinuch mean? It's a problem because a mechanech, we usually translate as, sorry?
Educator.
An educator.
But it's not.
Or a teacher. How do we translate melamed? A teacher. How do we translate mora?
A teacher.
How do we translate a rebbe? A teacher. Now, what's the obvious problem here? If we're going to take our language and translate it according to someone else's religion, I'm not going to go there now, and choose the exact same word each time, what's obviously the problem?
It's not accurate.
It can't be accurate because
there's
no distinction. If Hashem has chosen different words, then each one must be distinct, different to the other one. And yet if we're going to borrow popular translation and teacher, we're not only narrowing down our panoramic view that's available to us when we look at a child from much more than one angle, but worse than that, we are distorting what the word chinuch, melamed, rebbe, mora means. A mechanech from the word chinuch does not mean educate. Chinuch, if we look at the first time it appears, Avram Avinu, Abraham, when he finds out that his brother-in-law, and his nephew, Lot, was kidnapped, and was kidnapped from Sodom, and he went to save him. Same thing, same gematria. What did Avraham Avinu do? He engaged his trained men. Chapter 14, verse 14, Vayarek Chanichov. He took his trained men, says Rashi, Mechunach b'mitzvahs. They were trained in mitzvahs. Chinuch means training. Rashi bothers to give a second meaning. Chinuch, says Rashi, is Lashon Hatchalat Knisat Ha'adam. Or Davar, a Kli, Lu'umnot, She'atid La'amudba. It's a language of starting. Knisat Adam, when a person initiates, begins something. Lu'umnus, for a craft, a trade, a skill. La'atid, that in the future, La'amudba, he will stand in that item. Look at the language. It's very, very specific. It's very beautiful language. It's not only means training, it also means starting. For the sake of being able to stand in the future in that item. In English, what do we mean when we say someone can stand on their own two feet? What do we mean by that?
Independence.
Standing on your own two feet means you're self-sufficient, you're taking care of yourself. Look at the language. It is so specific, it will open up worlds to us. Ha'amada, amida, standing, means independence. Watch this. When a child progresses from discovering their body as an infant and eventually recognizes that the limbs, oh my gosh, it belongs to me. And they're starting to move parts of their body, and as their muscles improve, they eventually are able to move their body along the floor, crawl, and the next stage after crawling is standing up. Now, what will take place between crawling and standing? What will the child do? Fall. Stand up, fall. Stand up, fall. How many times will a child stand up and fall? Stand up and fall until they stand up on their own?
Many
times. As many times as that child needs to until they stand on their own. Now, if I as an adult was standing there watching my Moshi, trying to stand full, stand full, stand full, I might, you know, with my clicker here, no, Moshi, I don't know what's the matter with you. No, I've been watching you for the last 2 weeks. You have stood up, fallen 874 times. Can't you see this doesn't work? Now, if, God forbid, my son had the mind of an adult, he might say in response, "Ta, Dad, you're right. You know, this just doesn't work. You know, I can't take it. I've tried so many times. I'm perfectly mobile with crawling. I do not have to stand. That's it. I'm just crawling for the rest of my life." Now, thank God, our child does not have the mind of an adult. He has a mind of a child. He respects process. I'm fixated on results. So if the child were able to, he might say something like this. Dad, need to give you a bit of a chinuch. I'm not going to translate that now for you, Dad, but I have to explain something for you. You see, every time I stand full, what happens to my muscles, Dad? The muscles of my leg, they get weaker or stronger?
Stronger.
Oh, they're getting stronger. Each time I fall, stand up, they're getting stronger and stronger until my legs can carry the weight of my body. And then when I'm standing, whoa, for the first time, whoa, that's quite an accomplishment. Guess what I'm going to do next? What's the next step? The next step! Whoa! I'm about to make my first attempt to step forward, walk, and what will happen? Fall. And then what will I do? Start again. Fall. Start again. What is training? Starting again and again and again and again until I'm standing without falling, walking without falling. This language is very specific. It's the language which our sages, when we pay attention, the worlds will open up to us. The first mission in Pirkei Avos is completely different to all the rest of the Mishnayos. All the rest of Mishnayos is basically a Perush Tariq Mitzvahs. Pirkei Avos is emotional IQ. Pirkei Avos is about how to get along with oneself, with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with other people. First Mishnah. What do the sages tell us? Hevi Matunim Medin, be careful when you make decisions. What's number two? Ve'emidu Talmidim Harbe. Stand up many students. What do you mean stand up? What type of language is that? And the answer is? Train them to become what?
Independent.
What's the purpose of teaching? What's the purpose of chinuch? What's the purpose of education? To help the child become independent, think for themselves, make decisions by themselves, be able to read by themselves, be able to look at text and make sense of it by themselves, to have sufficient textual skills that when they look at the words, they will see a question because the wording doesn't make sense. And they'll ask an intelligent question and maybe even offer an intelligent answer. Ve'emidu talmidim harbe, stand up many students. Now here's where it gets even more interesting. Every translation has it the same way. Establish or make many students. It really means stand up, as in help your students become independent. But look at the language. It says talmidim harbe. Now, grammatically, you can say that means stand up many students. However, it would have been equally and perhaps more appropriate that if it was referring to the number of students a teacher is being encouraged to stand up, the language should have been, ve'emidu harbe talmidim. doesn't say that. It says, Talmidim Harbe. What's the Harbe going on? The Harbe is not going necessarily on the number of Talmidim. It's going on the number of times you stand them up. What's my job as a Machanech? Train this child, encourage this child, give them as many chances to start again and again and again until they can do it by themselves. Is this making sense so far? So a Machanech number one is a trainer who encourages the student to start again. How many times?
As many times.
Well, what about the other kids in the class that are already standing up on their own, already reading accurately, already reading fluently, already finished Aleph Beis? No. This student can go as many times as he, she needs. It's not about anyone else. Darkoi goes specifically on one child, nobody else. Number three, we looked at two meanings of chinuch, training and starting, and both really feed into each other, because training is all about starting again and again and again until you're able to stand up on your own. Number three, what is the two-letter root of chinuch? Two-letter root. Every word in Lashon HaKodesh has two or three-letter shoresh. What's the two-letter shoresh of chinuch? Hen. What does hen mean?
Grace.
Beauty. What type of beauty? It's a beauty that shines on the outside, but emanates from charm, favor. Where is it emanating from? From the inside. What is chen? So I want to share with you the Stipler Hatzal. Said chen is three words. It's a kesher she'eino nireh. It's an invisible connection. You Israeli Tzipora? Oh, fantastic. Any more Israelis here? Because if you know Hebrew, you can help me along over here. Hen is a kesher she'eino nireh. It's an invisible connection. What do you mean an invisible connection? Chinuch is an invisible connection. What does that mean? So says the Stipler, borrowing from Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. Kamayim hapanim lapanim. Just like waters reflect your facial expressions. Exactly. With not the slightest deviation. You smile, water smiles back. Frowns back. Kein lev ha'adam la'adam. So is the mind and heart of every person to another person. What we think about our child is what's going to be reflected back. Just like water reflects my face, what I'm thinking and feeling about my spouse, about my brother, my sister, my mother-in-law, is what's going to be reflected back. That's the way we are wired. We are creatures of reciprocation. Hain is a kesha she'eino nireh. What do you mean you can't see? You can't see what's going on in the mind and the emotions of another person. The only place you can get a clue as to what's going on inside someone is where? Where do you look? Oh, the face. How do you say face in Lashon HaKodesh? Panim. And what's the translation for panim? And it really means panim. It means the inside as well. What's the translation of panim? Face. Is it? But I don't mean this is a trick question. It's plural. So what's the correct translation? Faces. Do you know why? There's two faces. You have unlimited facial expressions. You have more muscles. Ask a dentist. You have more muscles in this part of your anatomy than any part of your body. You can make unlimited facial expressions. There is no word in biblical Hebrew for the singular face. Do you know that? Because it doesn't exist. Lashon HaKodesh created reality. Hashem spoke Lashon HaKodesh before reality existed. Baruch She'amar V'haya Olam. Oh, you spoke and then reality existed. You cannot have a word for something that doesn't exist. It literally means my faces. Yeah. The Pasach Yud is plural. So it really means Lo yelecha Elohim achirim al panai. Literally means don't have any other powers. The Christians translate it as gods, and we're stuck with their ridiculous translation. But it's forgive me, I'm not trying to put it down. It's just a terrible, terrible thing that we don't translate our Torah according to our language. Al panai means in front of my faces. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many faces. He hides behind nature. He hides behind gravity. He hides behind the stock market. He hides behind my mother. in-law, my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law. I'm sorry, I'm maybe offending some people here, I apologize. He hides behind my father-in-law. Sorry. I need some father-in-law jokes. If anyone can help me with some... All right, never mind. Are you okay with the mother-in-law jokes? Yeah? No, because my mother-in-law came to visit me. She was in New Hampshire a few months ago, and she... 6-hour drive to Muncie. She gets out the driveway, and I'm coming out the front of the door, and I see her there. I wasn't expecting her. She said, "Oh, hi, mother-in-law. How are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, very well. How long are you planning to stay this time?" "As long as I'm welcome." "Oh, you're not staying for coffee?" Anyway. The only place you can look at someone to see what's going on the inside, panim, same 4 letters, same word, is the panim on the outside. Because the outside reveals what's going on the inside. There are no mistakes in this language. There are many words like that. I'm not going to belabor that point, but the word chayim is another example. There's no word in Lashon HaKodesh for life. We translate it the way that Christians do. It's a terrible, terrible mistake. Chayim is plural. There's no word for singular. The word chay is an adjective. It means alive. There's no singular for life. You know why? Because it doesn't exist. We don't believe in one life. We believe in this world and the world to come. We believe that this world is only a corridor to the real world. This is Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba. This is Olam HaSheker. This is only Hollywood. But the real movie, oh, you got to wait to the real movie. We get a panoramic view of all time and all events. We have to take our language seriously. Chayin means an invisible connection. Says the Stipler, a mechanech is not an educator. A mechanech is a connector. A mechanech is someone who's connecting. Where do I start the connection? What am I thinking about this child? How do I judge this child? Based on performance, grades, report card? How do I assess this child? Or do I look that there's a much broader person in front of me? How many of us in this room discover talents that we didn't know we had round about the age of 30, 35, 40? Yes. Yeah. Sure. Happens all the time. Who's to say that I understand that my kid has reached their cap? Let's move on. There's other meanings we need to look at, but the word chinuch does not really mean educate. It really means connect. A mechanech is a connector. I've got a lot of work to do as a mechanech in what I think, which affects how I feel. Because if I don't relate to this child, it's because of what I'm thinking up here that I don't feel so good about the kid over here. My feelings are dictated by what I think. Love doesn't start over here. It starts over here. If I'm thinking kindly words, I'm thinking appreciation, gratitude, I will feel love. If I think negative, I will feel hatred. Hatred doesn't start over here. The word lev really means mind. It means 3 things, mind, icon of emotions, and the physical heart. Majority of the times, we have to look at which word lev means which of these 3. Majority of the time, throughout Tanakh, lev does not mean the heart. It means the mind. I'm not here to go into this in much more detail. It's a very important subject. But right now, let's move on. A mechanech is a connector. That's why Pirkei Avos says, Ein hakap dan melamed. Someone who gets angry easily cannot communicate to a child. Why not? Because I'm disconnecting. When I get angry, upset with a child, I'm disconnecting. And the child is going to back off because when they say or do this, it gets mom, dad angry. So they're not backing off because it's the wrong thing. They're backing off to avoid mom or dad's anger or the Rebbe or the Mora's anger. Ain't a cup and melamed. Because I'm disconnecting. I'm supposed to be thinking up here, why is this child behaving differently right now? True story. Boy was sent home, 7, 8 years old, because after asking his teacher for her age, she gave him a look, and instead of him understanding that it was not an appropriate question, he repeated the question. So she sent him to the principal, thinking, no, maybe the principal could put some sense into the kid. It's not, you don't ask your mora, your teacher, her age. So the principal sent the boy home, And the mother was a client of mine, so she asked me, you know, how should I handle it? It's a true story. So I said, well, did you ask Chaim why he asked her age? And she said, no, she wasn't calling me for that. She was calling to ask, how is she going to explain that a seven-year-old doesn't ask an adult lady her age? It's just not, it's disrespectful. But that's all on an assumption that what? That he understands or can understand this disrespectful. He's not coming from there at all. So she calls over Chaim. True story. I'm listening on the phone. She calls over Chaim and says, Chaim, why did you ask your Mara her age? You know what his answer was? She's my favorite teacher. And she was talking to the assistant and said it was her birthday. So I made a card for her and I finished it, but I didn't know what number to put on the front. So that's why he was sent home. You know, it's a silly example, but I'm just giving you, it's an example of how children are perfect. Children are not held accountable for mistakes they make. A child's breath, when they breathe words of Torah, are considered pure. It's not tainted with any averus. Aye, this child said Lashon Hara, this child's not keeping Shabbos properly. Children cannot make mistakes. And therefore, it behooves me as a parent, as a mechanech, as a teacher, to find out a little bit more than just what I see on the surface. Let's move to another word. Rebbe. We unfortunately translate it as teacher. It does not mean that. The Christians translate it as rabbi, and they translate that as teacher. It doesn't mean that. That's where the word rabbi comes from, but that's not what rabbi means. Rebbe comes from the two-letter root. Always look for the two or three-letter root, the shoresh. What does rav mean? Rav means a master or a lot. What is a rebbe who's meant to be a master teacher? What does he have to have a lot of? A lot of Torah, information. What else? Wisdom. What else? Sorry? Passion for the subject. And compassion. Hey, you're good. Brian trained you well. What else does a Rebbe have to have a lot of? Well, patience. Well, you may not be completely wrong. The Kohen Gadol had to be someone who was wealthy to earn respect. And according to Chazal and the Torah, leaders who were appointed as Dayanim had to be independently wealthy so they couldn't be bribed or impressed by other people's wealth. What else does a Rebbe have to have a lot of?
Children.
A lot of chaim. A lot of children. Getting very warm. Say more. If I have one style of teaching, why might that be a problem if I've got 20, 30 kids in my classroom? Is it possible that I've got 20 or 30 different minds? Yes. According to Shlomo Melech, I've got 30 different minds in the classroom. So what does a Rebbe have to have a lot of as well? Lots of different ways of reaching different children. And if I don't look at that intelligently, I may be teaching for 5, 10, 15, 20 years the same style and not realize I may be reaching a proportion of the class, but I have an obligation to teach al pi darkoi. You hear what we're... What is a mura? Don't translate a teacher. We're going away from that. What is a mura? From Lashon Hara. Show! Hara means to show, to guide, to direct. In fact, all these meanings are not only not teaching, they are not teaching. Teaching, and I'm going to give you the definition in the dictionary. A system of... Well, it should really be bringing out from the child. Edu as in deduce. But unfortunately, for the most part, education is defined as a delivery system of information. And this is a very dangerous problem. If I'm here to talk, students here to listen. I'm here to teach, students here to learn. I'm here to give the answers, students here to take down the answers. I'm here because I've got the information, students here because they haven't got the information. Do you hear a problem with this one-way street? That's called passive learning. How do we turn that around? How do we engage the mind of a student? How do you get the mind of the student engaged in the information? asking questions. Oh. Now watch this, and I'll prove to you a Torah model of teaching is the exact opposite of conventional education that we see around us. The Haggadah is all about questions. Excellent. And the word gid, the Vilna Gaon, says the word gid is the sinew that connects the bones to the rest of the body. So the Haggadah, through the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, is supposed to connect the neshama, the child's neshama, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the greatest event that took place in world history. Yetziat Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. So let's look for a moment how Shlomo HaMelech brings this point out. What is the predicate in a question? What's the assumption in a question? That there is an answer, and if the question is being posed to the student, what's the teacher saying to the student's mind? You know the answer, or you can figure it out yourself. Because what is a mora? Someone who's here to direct, show, guide, teach, deliver the information. What's my vote of confidence in my student if instead of drawing it out of the student, I give the answers, deliver the answers? What's my vote of confidence? 0 to 10. 0, I have no confidence. 10, I have full confidence. What's my vote of confidence in the intelligence of the child when I just deliver the effect? 0. Maybe 1 or 2.
0.
We've got a 0 here. You hear the problem? In fact, if you really think about it, when Moshe puts his hand up and he gives me an answer. No, Moshe, that's not the answer. Oh, Chaim, yeah, that's the answer. What am I telling the mind of Moshe when I say that's not the right answer? Chaim, that's the right answer. What am I saying to his mind?
There's only one answer when it could be not 70.
Excellent. First of all, I'm working on the assumption there's only one answer. Maybe there's more than one answer, but I don't discover that because I've already closed the case over here. No, that's not the right answer, Moshe. Chaim, that's the right answer. Is it possible that if I were to ask Moshe, how did you come to that answer? Is it possible he could reveal to me an explanation that makes sense? That I didn't entertain, or that I may have forgotten of, and now I realize, oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, that is an answer. Is that a possibility? Yeah, you agree?
Yes.
Good. Number two, is it possible when I ask Moshe, instead of just closing him down right there, no, Moshe, that's not the right answer. What happens if I ask him, how did you come to that? Is it possible he'll give me an explanation that when he explains his answer, reveals that the question he thought I asked, he gave the right answer to?
Wow.
Is that a possibility?
Absolutely.
Option three. Is it possible that when he gives his explanation to his answer, it reveals that the way I asked the question was not clear, and that therefore what he thought was the question he answered correctly, but it was really my problem. I wasn't clear in the question in the first place. Is that a possibility? You see, I have closed down Moshe's mind when I tell him that's the wrong answer. Chaim, that's the right answer. How much courage am I inspiring Moshe to have next time when I ask a question, if he knows that if he doesn't give the answer that I want, I expect, then I'm going to say, no, Moshe, that's not the right answer. Am I encouraging his mind to think next time? Or am I actually, in the name of teaching, giving him the right answer, saying that Chaim's got the right answer, am I actually dumbing down his mind? I'm actually making him think less by giving him the answer. You hear that? A red pen is a scar, and it's a very nasty thing to do to a child's work. But I'm not going to go there now, especially for spelling. That's treacherous. What is language? What's the purpose of teaching children to write? So they can communicate. What is it you want to encourage a child to communicate in writing? Anything he wants to. What is he thinking? What is he feeling? Memories of any experience or imagination, creativity. Do you agree? So the purpose of writing is to communicate what's inside to the outside. Let me finish this point. If I put focus on spelling, I don't even want you to get me started on this. I'll just finish this quickly. English is such a cholent of many languages. Latin, German. It's so confusing to a child. Because we tell the child A has an A or A sound, U is an A or U sound, G, G sound. Now, when he writes the word laugh, L or laugh, L-A-F-F or L-A-F, that's perfectly logical. And he spelt it according to the way I taught him the sounds. Now I give him a red mark across and I spell L-A-U-G-H. Laug. Oh, right, of course. What was I thinking in writing L-A-F? Do you realize how many words in English are required to become sight words that there's only one way to know the spelling? You've got to memorize it because it's so illogical. And we're going to accuse the kid of being learning disabled because he can't spell, when in reality, whoever invented the spelling was seriously learning disabled. We have a serious problem. So in the name of encouraging creativity in writing, what we really should do is, when a child writes composition, leave the spelling alone. Don't touch the spelling. Let them spell any which way. Because guess what happens when I put red marks through their misspelled words? What's going to happen in that child's brain next time they write? When they think of a word that's too sophisticated, but it's part of their vocabulary, but they're not sure how to spell, what will they do? They'll make a simpler word and they'll start writing to avoid writing the wrong spelling, and now I'm encouraging creativity or sabotaging it, all in the name of education. You hear some of the problems we've got here? This is not small. This is very serious. We're dumbing down our children in the name of chinuch, and that's not what the Torah is saying. In the name of education. Now look at the Torah model. HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated the Torah, the Chumash, to Moshe Rabbeinu. If you had the minimum skill set at Matan Torah, and you were a young child, and your father sat down with you, and you know, Moshe LaSarala, let's review last week's Parsha, Yisrael, right? Let's review. Guess what's going to happen as soon as you start learning that Parsha? Are you going to understand the words? Or are you going to have questions? You'll have questions. Moshe, what's it say here? Tati says, Lo Tirtzach. Good. What's that mean? Not allowed to murder. No, son, you're wrong. You're allowed to murder? No, you're wrong again. Oh, Tati, what does it mean? Well, don't you remember Moshe Rabbeinu told us that it depends. If someone has already said he wants to wipe you off the map, you have a mitzvah to get up earlier and kill him first. We don't believe in retaliation. Retaliation? Wait a minute. If your enemy is telling you he wants to kill you, knock him off first. You don't believe in retaliation. What are you waiting for? So, Lo Tirtzach doesn't mean what it says. It depends. Okay, Moshe, let's try one more. Lo Tasseh Bo Melacha. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to do Melacha. Okay, some. Are you allowed to do Melacha on Shabbos? It says Lo Tasseh Bo Melacha. No, you're wrong. You mean you're allowed? No, you're wrong again. So, which one is it? And the answer is, it depends. See, the Torah Shebaal Peh is missing there. You can't go through one pasuk, literally, throughout the Torah, without finding it makes no sense either in Poshup Shat, no sense in grammar. It breaks its rules all the time. Lashon Yachid is supposed to be Rabbin. Rabbin is supposed to be Yachid. Zacha is supposed to be Kevin. Kevin is supposed to be... Why does it do that? So that if you know how to read, what's going to happen to your mind? What are you going to do when you start reading the text? You're going to ask questions. The text screams out, I don't make sense, in order that you're forced to ask questions. And I will deliver you the missing information. And this went on for 1,500 years. We successfully transmitted the Torah Shebaal Peh through the Torah Shebichtav, the written and oral law, were taught together, father and son, mother and daughter, Rebbe, student, for 1,500 years. And when Rabbeinu HaKadosh finally wrote it down, would you say, oh great, now we've got all the missing information? Or did he write the Mishnah with such terse language, so cryptic, so coded, that you can't understand a single Mishnah? Do you know why? You're going to ask questions. Oh, so he wrote it, so you're forced to ask questions. Within the next 300 years, The Gemara had to fill in the missing information. But how's the Gemara written? How's it written? What's the format? Question, answer, problem, solution. Oh, it's drawing in the mind of the student all the time. Is this making sense? So the Torah model is to teach in such a way that you have the student thinking for themselves, asking questions. Look at the word melamed. I'm not going to do it in any detail now. Melamed comes from the word lamed. What does lamed mean? Learn, teach. What is lamed as a prefix in front of a word? Two. What else does it mean? Two or? Four. What's the difference? Not two, it's not a mathematical question. Two means direction, four means purpose. A melamed, a teacher, inverted commas, is here to give direction and purpose. Why am I learning this? Are you giving me a direction? Oh, I'm starting to get it. You're teaching me all the aleph base, the tsura of each ayis, the shape of the letters. Then you teach me the sounds so that I can learn the nekudos and the ayis. Now you're blending, I'm learning how to mischaber the ot and the nekuda. Now I'm reading two-letter words, three-letter words. Oh, now I'm reading accurately and fluently. Oh, now you're teaching me shirashim. You're teaching me the vocabulary. Oh, you're teaching me the shimushim, the prefixes and suffixes. Oh, you're teaching me how to look at a word. Ben, son. Bincha, your son. Barnecha, your sons. Lebarnecha, to your sons. Ulebarnecha, and to your sons. Oh, you're teaching me how the word is constructed so that when I push away the prefix suffix and look at the two or three letter root in the middle, I can then reconstruct it and I'll have an intelligent question. Is this making sense? Melamed is here to give direction and help them understand purpose. You're teaching my mind to become independent, think for myself. Now let's look at Na'ar. Hanuch le'Na'ar. We looked at Chinuch a little bit. We looked at Melamed, Rebbe, and Mura. Let's look at Na'ar. Na'ar does not mean young child.
Na'ar means that somebody doesn't know.
Excellent. Na'ar does not mean a child, it doesn't mean young person, it means someone who's not finished. Adam She'enu Shalem. In the words of the Radak, Adam She'enu Shalem, who misharet legadol, he's apprenticing to someone who is a gadol. Gadol literally means independent. Gadol means an adult, because an adult means someone who's self-sufficient. Yishmael was 52 years old, and he was called a Na'ar at the Arkada, when he went to escort Avram Avinu with Eliezer, who was even older than him. Yosef was 17 when he was called a Na'ar. A Na'ar is not a young age. It means unfinished in some respect. Hanuch Na'ar al Pidarkoi means train the unfinished person. A child is an adult in the making. They're not an adult yet. They're getting there. They're becoming an adult. Adult means independent. And in whichever area... There are kids who are 36, 40 years old who are still dependent, right? There are people who are still not earning a living. They're not financially independent, right? 36, 40, maybe around about then they do come. But you understand what I'm saying? It's a real concept that the Chazal are giving us over here. Al-Pi Darkoi. Let's look at Darkoi very quickly. Darkoi. Darkoi means, can I teach information to a child who's not ready for this information? Or do I have to follow darkoi, which means when they're ready? It has to be when the child's ready. If I force a subject or scope and sequence when the child's not ready, what will happen? The child will start thinking, oh, I'm not like all the others. Why aren't I getting it? Most of the others seem to be getting it. I'm not getting it. And then dad, mom does extra homework and it's not working. Okay, don't worry, we'll put it in resource room. If that doesn't work, we'll get a private tutor. If that doesn't work, we'll get a specialist. If that doesn't work, we'll go full battery of tests. And what's the message each time the kid's not getting it? I'm not okay. I'm different. Something is wrong. Whoa, something's missing. If my father can't fix me, the resource room can't fix me, the private tutor's not succeeding, the reading specialist's not working, the full battery of tests, and now they're taking me to another expert. What's the message going through the child's mind? Something is seriously wrong with me. They can't fix me. Wow. It's a very serious problem. And this is why it's a serious problem. Every child is craving to learn. Because they know inside they can. If we follow Darkoi. Sorry? Okay, so I don't want to start with a test. in the educational system, which we unfortunately have adopted from the world around us, I'll back off. In a Torah model, there are three parts to the learning process. There's what's called Matan Torah, the gift of the Torah, which means that this information, if I don't give it to the child, he can't come to it on his own. Moshe, this is an Aleph. Chaim, this is a Bet. This is a Segel, Eh. That's called Matan Torah. The second part of the learning process, which is the biggest and most important, is Chazara, review. Who's responsible for the Matan Torah? The Rebbe, the teacher, the Mora. Who's responsible for Chazara, for review?
The parents.
Well, I can be on top of it at home, but who has to do the Chazara themselves? The children. Now, what does that mean? How many times they review it? Or is it not just how many times, but also how many ways they review the information? Then the third part is mastery, kinyan. They've acquired it. There really is a fourth, which is called accumulative chazara, that after they've actually remembered this Mishnah, learned this parasha, they should continue to do chazara in less frequent increments so they never lose it. In the non-Jewish world, please forgive me, I don't really like making comparisons, but in the non-Jewish world, and it's better if you don't get me started on this, because if I show you the history of the educational system today in the Western society, you might not be able to sleep tonight. I'm very serious. In the Western society, they figured out, how do we dumb down the masses? And it's very simple, we educate them. The way to educate is teach information, matana, skip stage 2, chazara, go straight for the kinyan, test. After the test, go to the next level of gift, of information. Skip chazara, go straight to the next test. After that, go to the next level of information. Now just be honest with me, you're adults in this room. Just be honest with me. What starts happening to the information in your brain starting 1 second after the test? Just be honest. Why? Why? You were cramming it in the night before or week before. Why should it go? And the answer is, I have no relationship with this information. It was sold to me. Do you know why I'm doing it? For the test. Maybe for the teacher, because I like the teacher. But starting 1 second after the test starts to download. Why? If I don't buy the information myself, if I'm not kainer it, which is from Chazara, from review and lots of different reviews, then what essentially is happening is that there's literally a plan, and today there's no people not doing this deliberately. Teachers are not doing this deliberately. I'm just sharing that it's very, very, very sad that we're borrowing from a system that is actually designed to keep the masses stupid. It's a serious problem. It's a very serious problem. And I'm not trying to be controversial. If you want, you know what, don't take it from me. There's books on this subject. One of the best ones is, you're not going to like the title, I'm telling you right now. Weapons of Mass Instruction. It details the history behind the Western educational system. But let's move forward. Darkoi means as the child is ready. Number two, it means the child has to be endeared to this information. It has to be chaviv. Enjoys it. The first taste you want the child to have of the otiot, of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, we used to have them lick the letters, the shapes from honey, because you want their first taste of Torah. Any area. Parashat HaShavua, when they're learning the weekly parasha, it tastes so delicious. It's a storyline. It's very, very endearing. The first impression of a child's learning experience in any area, if they enjoy it, their mind is automatically turned on to the natural curiosity that it has to want to know more about that subject. Doesn't make any difference which subject it is, math, science, geography. If he's got a boring math teacher, science teacher, and their first lesson is over his head, and that's his first impression of math, first impression of science, it's going to be harder to win him back. He might actually have a really good teacher another year and do very well. And then the following year, not do very well because he didn't get along with it. The new there's a lot of variables here, but I'm bringing out the following. Darkoi includes not only when the child's ready, but also the pace of the child and which is a number three. Number two is endearment. Number three, at the pace of the child. And number four, darkoi has got to be in his way. What's his way? There are many different ways children learn. I'm going to just touch on some of them very briefly. L'chaim, to lives. Baruch ata Adonai, Eloheinu melech, haolam shehakol, nehyeh bidvaro. There's different learning modalities, learning styles. We know that there's different intelligences. Now, unfortunately, the educational system, I'm not here to decry the educational system. I'm just sharing observations so we can understand our children better, why there's so many kids struggling. And here is really the crux of it. The educational system, for the most part, I'm not talking about yeshivas per se, but unfortunately we've fallen into the trap of the world's view of education. Only recognizes one intelligence, IQ. That refers to analytical ability, short-term memory, long-term memory, ability to articulate one's position, perhaps superior to someone else's. That's academic, intellectual, IQ, intelligence quota. Thanks to people like Howard Gardner, who've looked into identifying that every single child really has a different starting point in more than one intelligence. Academic intelligence is an intelligence. There are quite a few more. There's language intelligence, mathematical intelligence, there's musical intelligence, there's kinesthetic intelligence, that's movement of the body, coordination of limbs. There's spatial intelligence. And we'll look maybe very briefly at emotional intelligence. Let me share with you very briefly each one of these. Musical intelligence is fascinating. I'm going to use two key words, acute awareness. Musical intelligence is acute awareness of sound. There are children that from a very early age, some have a very acute awareness of sound, tempo, beat, rhythm. Usually good musicians are gifted in musical intelligence. Professor Suzuki, if you want to check this out, you can Google him, or your non-Jewish neighbor can Google him for you. Professor Suzuki did fascinating research where if you want your child to play in his concerto, you have to sign him up before the child's born. During pregnancy, the mother has to play the exact same Beethoven or Mozart concerto thousands of times before the child reaches the age of three. During pregnancy, after pregnancy, then at 3 years old, the child is brought to Professor Suzuki and he gives the child a violin to the scale of the child's body. He's barely just out of being a toddler. And it takes a matter of hours over a few weeks for the child to master the movement of the bow against the strings that match the music that's already playing in his mind thousands and thousands of times. He will have as many as 300 children between the ages 3, 4 and 6 years old, 300, playing a perfect Mozart concerto. And you and I in the audience would say, these are all child prodigies. These are all geniuses in music. And the answer is they're not. It's an intelligence that was developed. Every child has a starting point. Some are stronger than weaker, but he proved that you can even give a child an advantage by developing that intelligence in the child's mind. Mathematical intelligence is acute awareness, two key words, of numbers. What does that mean? Sometimes you find a child has a very quick grasp of how numbers have a different quantity in relationship to another number. And they can almost experience how 2 is twice 1, or 3 is 3 times 1, and 1 more than 2, and they start seeing the relationship between one number and another. Actuaries, accountants are often gifted in mathematical intelligence. Language intelligence, fascinating, has nothing to do with spelling, zero to do with grammar. You can have children who are failing language in school and be gifted in language. Because language intelligence is acute awareness of words and their multiple meanings. Many times you've got a leader in the class, the child who's like gift of the gab, has persuasive power of words, leadership qualities. It's usually language intelligence. Good teachers are often language intelligent. Good salespeople are language intelligent. Politicians are usually language intelligent. I think it's the only intelligence they do have. But that's being kind. Language intelligence is acute awareness of words and their many meanings. Then you have kinesthetic intelligence. That's acute awareness of body parts, good coordination of arms, legs, eye-hand coordination. Athletes, top athletes, are typically gifted. So their starting point is already very good, and then it's developed even higher. Then you have spatial intelligence. Spatial intelligence is acute awareness of space. You have a child who's got acute awareness of space, height, breadth, depth, color, contrast, shade. Artists, architects are often spatially intelligent, gifted in that particular intelligence. And then last of all, you have what's called emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is fascinating. We're going to touch on it very briefly. Emotional intelligence is broken down into two areas: interpersonal intelligence and intrapersonal intelligence. Interpersonal intelligence refers to acute awareness, two key words, of other people's body language, facial expressions, and tone of voice. A child who's got a strong awareness of other people's facial expressions, body language, tone of voice, is usually able to read very quickly when their friend or their mother or their father or brother or spouse has a switch in their mood or switch in their tone or facial expression, and they pick up on it quickly and they respond, whether it means to be sensitive and give them more space or to back off or to take more interest, be more sensitive. Interpersonal intelligence has to do with reading other people. It has to do with love, appreciation, gratitude, loyalty, devotion, understanding, sensitivity, giving, forgiving. Whoa, that's a biggie. Integrity, honesty, perseverance. It's a long list. Intrapersonal intelligence is acute awareness of myself. Two things: what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling. If I'm intrapersonally intelligent, I'm acutely aware. I will pick up very quickly when I notice a switch in what I'm thinking or feeling and respond to it. If I'm intrapersonally not intelligent, it could take me weeks, months, or even years or decades of therapy until I finally hop. You've been taking advantage of me. Oh, the whole world's been taking advantage of me. And I start realizing I've been codependent or whatever else. And I start discovering I'm setting standards. I'm setting a limit. I will not let people do this. I might even go over the edge. If I wasn't aware for years about what I was thinking and feeling, because I just let people say or do, because I remember being a schmata from the youngest age. Now, here's where it gets really sad. In the classroom, basically the only intelligence that counts is academic intelligence. Do you know why that's sad? I'll prove it to you. It's very sad. In every classroom you ever went to in your memory, as in elementary, high school, college, yeshiva, beyond, was there at least one straight A student in every classroom? True or false?
Yes.
Absolutely true. In the mind of every other student who's not a straight A student, what's the answer to the following question? Who in this classroom is a candidate for success in life? The C student, B student, or the A student?
The A student.
Now, watch this. In the real world, let's define the real world. Marriage. It's not a word, by the way, it's a sentence. Never mind. Only the men got that one, sorry. In the real world, raising children. In the real world, earning a living, getting along with different and difficult people. Let's ask ourselves a question. What will count the most? Mathematical intelligence, spatial intelligence, kinesthetic intelligence. What's going to count the most in a marriage, in raising kids, getting along with other people in the workplace? Emotional intelligence, to the extent that if you put all the intelligences on one scale and emotional intelligence on the other, guess which one will outweigh all the others combined? Emotional intelligence, every time. In Lashon HaKodesh, how do you say emotional intelligence? Midot. Excellent. 10 points for Gryffindor. That was good. Wow. That's only for a sophisticated audience. Herschel Potterovich, sorry. Okay. So, emotional intelligence in Hebrew is midot. What does midah mean? Measure. What else does it mean?
Weight.
Excellent. What else does it mean?
Character.
Ribbono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe. In English, you've got one word for character and another word for measure. In Hebrew, why do you have one word? It has two different meanings. Oh, there are no mistakes in this language. What's the only measure of a human being? My size? My shape? How much money I have? Zip code I live in? Size of my home? Car I drive? Bank account? Position I hold in the corporate world? Which is the true measure of a human being? Oh, character. That's why the word midah means both. Emotional IQ is, whether we like it or not, hands down, wins every time. In the classroom, watch where emotional IQ plays a major role. If I don't help Moshe understand how he came to his answer in that example we gave before, what am I saying to his mind? You don't have to think for yourself. You can't think for yourself. I'm going to give the answer for you. And when I do correct Moshe on anything, reading, what am I actually saying to the mind of Moshe? If I give the answer, what am I saying? You are good for nothing. What's the proof? What's my vote of trust in your intelligence? 0 to 10. 0, I have no trust in your intelligence. 10, I have full trust in your intelligence. When I give the answer, what's my vote of confidence in their intelligence? It's close to 0. I can destroy a child in the classroom, or even one-on-one, if I don't come from a starting point. This child can. He can learn. He's capable. But we've got to figure out, how does Darukai work? There are children that are more kinesthetic, or spatial, or musically intelligent, but here's the good news. What happens if you have a way where physical materials already reflect multiple intelligences? Listen to the theory. What would happen if you actually have a physical material for teaching Shirashim, the 2 or 3 letter root words throughout Chumash? What would happen if you actually have materials which, when the child engages with the physical materials reflect multiple intelligences, modalities, learning styles? For example, he has to move his hands around. He has to sort cards out, for example. Or he has to sequence. That's mathematical intelligence, sequencing in patterns, numbers. What happens if he has to move his body? That's spatial intelligence, kinesthetic intelligence. Do you understand what I'm bringing out here? What you have with Rabbi Shimon Shane, he uses many manipulatives, and they're very sensitive about, let's find out what the kid's good at. How do you do that? And the answer is, leave the kid alone. Let him gravitate to what he's good at. If you've got a kid who's always at the easel painting, and you want to get him to do the ABC, alphabet, hey, I don't have to say, Masha, you know what? You've been on the easel for 2 weeks. No one else gets a turn. You're very good, but you've got to do some ABC. You'll never be able to read if you're stuck over there. 1 second. Bring over the alphabet and ask him, Moshe, you know what? You're so good at art. Could you draw me in different colors all these letters? The aleph and the base and the gimel. You got a Moshe who's stuck with the blocks and the Lego and the building blocks. Great news. Let him make the shapes of the letters with the building blocks. Because you're endearing him, bedarakoi, in his way. And then you're going through the back door, he'll be endeared to letters because he's got a pleasurable association in his mind to the letters. Is this making sense? I'm just giving you a simple... let me teach you a memory system. It'll take you less than a minute. You can time me on this. Just do this on trust for a few seconds. 1 rhymes with sun. 2 rhymes with glue. 3 rhymes with tree. Now, if you've got a kid who's really poor in language, but good with numbers, I'm showing you now a system that will get the kid who's poor with language, he'll get good with language because he loves numbers. Or vice versa. Watch this. He hates math, good with language. Wine rhymes with 9. What's tree minus glue? 1 is sun, 2 glue, 3 tree. What's tree minus glue? Sun, very good. What's sun plus glue? Tree, very good. What's wine divided by tree? Tree, very good. That's okay. You don't need it. You don't need it. There are plenty of people who don't need it. I'm giving you an example where what happens if you actually got a picture of a tree and wine and 8 for gate and 7 for heaven, etc. And you can teach math with pictures. You can teach language with pictures. Do you understand? There are fun ways for children to learn. There are materials, which is going to give you a couple of samples, where you can help the child gravitate to their own darka, his, her way, because they will go to that material. Whether it's a math material, great. We'll use math for learning Chumash. Yes. Math is a language that the Chumash assumes you know. Yom Echad, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, you've already got fractions already. Chapter 5 in the Chumash Bereishis, you've got all Toldos Adam till Noach. You've got 10 generations and lots of ages over there. And then it goes again in chapter 10 and 11, 10 generations from Noach till Avram. Take out math materials and plot it out on a timeline. Oh, who lived when? So you can get children engaged. I'm speaking to you, I'm asking you to borrow in your mind's eye. I'm going to show you a couple of materials in just a few moments. Gematria. Yes, Rabbi. I would say up to 30. After then, you need an assistant. 25, 30, you need an assistant. No, I'll explain why. The actual lesson in how to use a specific material takes somewhere between 30 seconds and 2 minutes. In some cases, a few, 2 or 3 minutes, maybe 4. Once the child knows, for example, how long do you think it takes to teach the structure of Chumash Bereishis? That means that the child will know 50 prokim, 50 chapters, and the basic information in every single chapter. So if the child is very slow, it takes 3 hours to master 50 prokim, if he's very slow. Wow. I've done this for 27 years with learning disabled children. There aren't any, there are very few children who are actually, this particular system I'm referring to is like right, 6 years and up. But I work with three-year-olds all the way through third year Bes Medrash. But there are materials. I don't have all my materials here, but there are materials that when a child is engaged in physical materials that reflect multimodalities, learning styles, and intelligences, the kid will get it in their strength, and they won't even be diagnosed as needing resource room because they're getting the information bedarka in their way. Is this making sense at least? So, for example, what happens? What is a picture? In English, you have a description. A picture is worth
1,000 words.
What happens if you've got a picture for every chapter in the Chumash? Here's just Bereishis in my hand. A picture for every chapter in Bereishis. Creation of the universe. Creation of man. So these are stick pictures. I've got a photo version as well. The snake in the tree. Chapter 3. Tree. The snake was in the tree. Saying to Chava, trust in me, just in me. Close your eyes, trust in me. 4, rhymes with door, by the way. 4 is chapter 4, you see Cain kills Hevel. 10 generations from Adam till Noah. Using a memory system takes about 3 hours, not 3 hours straight, it's like 5, 10, 15 minutes increments. A child can memorize what's in every single parent. What you're essentially doing is putting the map on Chumash. Here's a map in 5 columns of the entire Chumash. 50 chapters, 40 for Shavuos, 27 for Yikra, etc. So you're delivering using pictures. On the back is the title, what's going on in that chapter, and then breakdown. That's for a little bit when the kids are a little bit older. But these are ways where you can have a child have files in their brain for the entire Chumash. How long does it take to teach Tariq Mitzvot to children?
What?
Tariq Mitzvot, 630 Mitzvot. How long do you think it takes to teach about 100 Mitzvot to a 6, 7-year-old? 7-year-old, let's say 7-year-old. How long does it take to teach about 100 minutes? About a year. I can do it in 40 minutes.
Wow.
No tricks. Do you know why? If the kid is a normal kid, which means they've got a full range of strengths and weaknesses in all intelligences. I'm here to claim that in the 27 years I've worked with children, I've never met, of all the supposed learning disabled children I've worked with, I've never met a kid who's not gifted in at least 3 intelligences. Which means you can get a kid in almost any subject, learning that subject, if it's done when they're ready, in a way that's endearing, at the pace that they can handle, and it's in their strength. See, what I'll do is, here I've got only 208 of the 613 minutes. I've got photographs of 538 so far, but I've got stick versions of all 613. Guess what I'll do? I'll go with the child. What does that mean? I'll pull out of here about 100 plus photos of mitzvahs the child is already familiar with. Mezuzah, lulav, sukkah, tefillin shel rosh, tefillin shel yad, Shabbos, rest, don't do malacha. And guess what? When I show them a photograph, and I go through this, it'll take me about 40 minutes to teach 100 mitzvahs. And at the end, if I give them this pile, guess what they'll do? They'll say back, and I'm not exaggerating if I tell you, close to 100% accuracy. They just have to look at the picture. Let me pull out, I should have done this a little bit earlier for you. But let's say, for example, you know, this is not such a common mitzvah. There's an issur d'oraisa, a prohibition in the Torah, lo tichtov kaka. You're not allowed to write a tattoo on the arm of a person.
Right.
But what happens if you give a child an actual photo of a real tattoo, and then you teach them the mitzvah? Do you think this is going to be complicated and difficult for them to remember?
No, they're going to remember it.
No, it's not difficult at all. And if you want to know, does this apply to men and women? Turn it over. On the back, it will have you. Here's a bathroom picture of a man and a woman. And then the next one is an X, which means it's a loy tasei, and it's negent, it's the charim and the kavim, the kibbutz, men and women. What happens if you've got a simple picture? Kriyat Shema. Do you follow what I'm doing?
Yeah.
The mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. I'm just going to take mitzvahs, which either the child is already familiar with, tefillin shel rosh. Complicated? Tefillin shel yad. Confusing?
No.
No. Mitzvah of davening, tefillin. Birkas Kahanim, here's at the Kotel.
Beautiful.
Mitzvah of Mezuzah. Here's a mitzvah. This is less familiar, but if you've got a photo, a picture, speaks a thousand words. I'm here to tell you that I'll give the children pictures they already know, they're part of their culture, and then I'll add on mitzvahs which they may be less familiar, like the tattoo, but once they got a picture, they got it. Here's a sofa writing a Sefer Torah.
Right.
And I'll teach the child some mitzvah in the Torah for a Jew to write a Sefer Torah. Now guess what will happen when I show them this picture? What do you see? Here's a Jew with a crown on his head. Oh, he's a king. Oh, there's a separate mitzvah in the Torah for a Jewish king to write his own Sefer Torah as well. This is a less frequent, common, familiar mitzvah. But once you've got a picture, how difficult is it for the child to remember this picture afterwards? Do you follow?
They follow very well.
I'm just giving you Rashi Tevis. Tzitzit. Complicated? Birkat HaMazon. Complicated? Bris Milah. No, it's not a real picture. It's just the actual... just the simcha. The simcha. But you can go into more detail. I don't have all my materials here, but I'm giving you examples. What happens if we go through intelligently what, and these are cards that belong to Rabbi Shane, so I'm borrowing them, these are the cards that I've created. How many words are there in Chumash Bereishis? The answer is 16,258. I just counted them on my way in the plane. So no, they're in the 16,258. But how many words does a child need to know to translate the vast majority, and I'll give you a number of vast majority, I'll quantify it, 81%. Out of 16,258 words, there are enough words that repeat themselves frequently enough
right.
that if you know those words, you don't need to know 16,000.
Well,
if you know 197 words, you can translate 13,000.
Wow.
Is that I'm not arguing this. This is math. The number of times these 197 words repeat themselves in Chumash Bereishis, 20 plus times, means that if you teach the children these round off to 200 words, and all the prefix suffixes, only 46 of them. So you only need to teach a child 246 items. Guess what they can do now?
Translate
81% of Chumash Bereishis. That's 13,000 words. Is that a good deal?
Very good.
Should I be drilling children in words that they hardly ever come across, or drill them in these 200?
That's right.
So I created a photograph, actually for 300, I added an extra 100 pictures, for Parashat Bereshit Noach and Lech Lecha. Most yeshivas start from Bereshit, and because there are some words there that are less frequently found, but will help the child get a good head start on Parashat Bereshit Noach and Lech Lecha, so we added an extra 100 words. You've got photos here, let's say good. So this is a concept, right? That's not as easy as light, morning, boker, right? Yayin, day. Simple pictures. Are these complicated?
This is where they learn English and?
Yes, I've got these in Yiddish too. Laila, night, right? Very simple. These are control words. Then what happens as the children are learning this, you teach the kid how to teach himself these pictures, then you go to the smaller version, where the same thing, but blank on the other side. Here you've got 12 English words, 12 Hebrew, and the picture. Now what do? You teach a child, let's play go fish, let's play match memory. You know how to play match memory? And get the kids doing chazara, reviewing themselves. You give them a ton of the first 12, guess what? They can now then go through the next, the rest of the 303 on their own. Is this making sense?
Yeah.
There are ways to help children teach themselves. Because very sadly, we don't have a word for teach in Lashon HaKodesh. There's no word for teach in Lashon HaKodesh. Do you know why? Because it doesn't
do
exist.
It really.
That's not how to teach. V'shinatam l'vanecha, Rav Rishonim agree, the mitzvah to teach Torah is in the words v'shinatam l'vanecha. V'shinatam does not mean teach.
It means to repeat over and over.
Shinun means repeat.
Repeat.
It also means, shinun also means sharpen. And it also means, what's the two-letter root of shinun? Just ask questions and the Torah will open itself up to you. Shen means tooth. So Meshinatam Levanecha literally means teeth to your children. What's the function of a tooth?
To chew.
So what it means is review Shinayim twice, Shinayim.
Right.
Sheni, it's all in double repetition. Because what is the way to get a child to master information? Repeat it. But what, not just a number of times, repeat it in lots of different ways. So it penetrates, do it in lots of modalities. Spatial, visual, auditory, kinesthetic. Is this making sense?
Yes.
Now, Vishinanta, why does it mean teeth, chew to your child? Ladies, you answer this question. Husband comes home, you make him his favorite steak. How do you know, not just believe, how do you know he really likes it? Maybe it's just a tzaddik and he says, oh, this is delicious, can I have another piece, please? You don't really know. Maybe she's being a nice guy. You know, he doesn't want to offend you. But that's option number one. Option number two, he says nothing. All he does
is chew.
Now, I'm slightly exaggerating, but no. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. When you put the chocolate, dark chocolate, of course, in your mouth, and you just let it melt. I'm not exaggerating this time. And you just let the taste buds expose to the maximum area of chocolate in your mouth. Your child, when is the only time they know you savor the taste of the food? It's in the chewing. V'shinantam levanecha literally means role model with passion. How do we bench? Say a shiatsa, make a bracha, go to davening, learn. What's our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in front of our kids? Where's mum went to a shiurta? Where's dad gone tomorrow? Gone to Daf Yomi, preparing for the shiur. How we live is our commercial. We are v'shinantam. Vishinantam does not mean teach, it means role model, because that's the most powerful way of teaching.
So you should really say all of the brachot out loud, you should say the Birkat HaMazon out loud in front of your children, so that they can hear it.
You're right. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, I actually am meant to say Birkat HaMazon out loud, Birkat Rab, and brachos loud enough for the person to be able to answer on me. Yeah, that's correct.
Your facial expressions were even better than the galloping goat night.
Thank you, sir. I love you too.
Not every child will necessarily absorb that, so you have to turn them around. You take the word shay, and you can give them positive reinforcement, which is nosh. Some nosh, you want to give positive reinforcement, it'll open them up.
Yeah, it's definitely the way to a man's stomach, and a child's stomach is... Yes, sir.
Is there also a concept within your teachings of that a child like has to know that he's wrong, that he needs to be challenged in like a way that it might like maybe even hurt a little bit, that sometimes it's like that you know,
that is a definitely good recipe for turning children off and having them fall off there, I agree. But if you want a child to be endeared, the Torah says, Ka'amu Uruhu, Hitayv Hashem. Go see, experience, taste it for yourself. If it's not good, it's not Torah. If it's not tasty, it's not Torah. That doesn't mean it can't be a challenge. On the contrary, part of the growth is the challenge. That's for sure. But to have to make the child wrong or break the child, and with the shitta that I have to build him. But I can only build if I break it first, and you will hear that. You do hear that. I've heard it more than once from Rosh Hashivas that they've got to destroy the child and then rebuild him. And some kids got the strength, and I'm not even sure if they really do long term. And most kids are not up to it. We do not have a generation of children that can take Midas Adidas. It does not work well.
I think there's a book that says, don't break me, make me.
Make me, excellent. Yes, sir.
I was told that. You really should let the child, I don't think it's the child's fault, I think it's the teacher's fault more than the child. So if your concept really should be taught to the teachers, not to the children. Because if the teachers understood your situation, then they could teach the children, and there wouldn't be any learning still.
So most of my work for the last 10 years is teacher training. That's what I work 3 days a week in Brooklyn. I feel that I can reach more children through the teachers than doing private tutoring. So I do much, much less private tutoring than I've done in the past. It's close to zero now. I work basically with 43 Meisters in Brooklyn, Rachman Striff, Vizhnitz, Bobov, Klausenberg, three schools in Satmar, a lot of the Hasidic Meisters, and Beis Yaakov, Rabbi Aaron Reich, Beis Yaakov of Borough Park. 60 teachers got trained last year, and they just opened up a track, Al Pidarkai, in preschool, based on this. So slowly getting out there. Lubavitch have gotten on more recently. Rabbi Sheik came with eight or nine teachers this last summer, and Bezor Hashem will be continuing the rest of the year to finish up the full training. Yes, sir?
Has this method or attitude of teaching moved towards or to secular academic institutions, to those teachers?
Excellent question. So in the training that I offer, I have what's called 10 building blocks of chinuch. One of them, the first one actually, is language acquisition, Lashon HaTorah. So it has to do with how to teach Shuras Oisius and the Nekudais blending, how to teach accuracy and fluency in reading, then how to teach Shiroshim, the 2-3 letter root words, how to teach all the prefix suffixes, all Bedarka, many, many modalities, etc. Out of the 10 building blocks, number 5 is called the integrated curriculum, which means instead of teaching secular subjects as secular, we actually teach math from the Torah, geography from the Torah, science from the Torah, and even English from the Torah. It's too complicated for me to explain how at this particular moment, but I'll give you, let's say, one example. Let's say Yarden. So instead of translating it the way the Christian Bible does, which is Jordan River, translate it according to the Torah. What's the three-letter root of Yarden? Yarden. What does Yarden mean?
Go down.
How far will water go down? Lowest possible point. What's the lowest point on planet Earth?
Dead Sea.
The Dead Sea. And which is the river that feeds into the Dead Sea? The Yarden. And what's the name of the territory? Which Shevet does Yarden originate from? Dan. Oh, Yarad, Dan. It comes down from the Shevet of Dan. And what is Dan the two-letter root of?
The
Din. Oh, so how does a Kodesh Baruch Hu decide how much water comes down in Eretz Yisrael? He judges us according to our mitzvahs, our deeds, our Ma'aseh Tovim, our Chesed, our Torah, our Tefillah. So it helped the children. When we get to the word Yaradim, first of all, let's open up a bit broader, and then, you know what we'll do? Let's teach them the three stages of a river. Let's teach them the names of the different points on a mountain, which where the water falls and brings the silt down to the lowlands and forms a waterfall and a lake and help the children learn, because the Torah is speaking about canyons. Last week, Parashas B'Shalach, Pi HaChirois, Rashi says, Shnei Salon Gavayim, at Pi HaGai, there's two large rocks, cliffs, at the mouth of a deep canyon. And then, so let's learn about canyons and the formation of valleys. Because the Torah is talking about Ahar. Please forgive me, I'm just telling you as it is. Why does the word har mean mounting, and hara means pregnant? Because what does it look like to a child on the outside? Looks like a mountain. You help children see that the Torah reveals itself, it comes alive. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes. Right. Yes, so as I said, I don't have all my materials here, but as an example, the children will learn a code word for every single one of these Tariq mitzvahs. Then they learn the pasuk, then they learn the icons, which, if it's a loitase, which consequence do they get? There's an icon for each consequence, Arba Mises based in Malkus, etc. Then there's, on a different version of this, there's a short essay on the back of each card for the teacher to teach the child. Then I have strips. You've got strips which the child has to match with the picture. So one strip has the code word. Let's say Birkat HaMazon. We'll have the code word Birkat HaMazon. So he has to match that underneath here. Then he has to match the Pasuk, Ve'achalta V'savata V'rachta, underneath there. And then he matches any icons that go with it. Then there's another level. I'm just giving you examples to answer your question. We have something called Which Mitzvah Am I cards. So for example, again, it's not teaching, it's drawing out of the child. You have clues on this, which mitzvah am I, and each clue gets a drop easier. So what you're teaching is information where the child is thinking about what you're saying. So for example, I'm a box, I'm a black box, I have black straps, I have four compartments, I have a shin on one side, and I've got a four-armed shin on the other side. Which mitzvah am I? Oh, I'm Tefillin Shel Reish. I'm a beged. I've got a hole in the middle. I've got four corners. I've got five knots at the end of each corner and eight strings. Which mitzvah am I? Oh, tzitzit. So as the children are learning these details, eventually, if the kids are reading, which is usually around about middle or end of second, third of first grade, you give the which mitzvah am I cards to the children and they test each other. This afternoon I was giving an explanation how you can teach Gemara so that the children, no matter what their starting point is, you get them straight into learning. You get them in the driver's seat, not passive learning. It's very powerful. It literally takes minutes to teach a teacher how to teach Gemara so that the children are fully engaged. Unfortunately, most yeshivas, we don't chup what a challenge Gemara really is for kids. It's torture. I'm saying it kindly. It's torture. It's Aramaic. There's no punctuation. There are no nekudais for the child to be able to read the words properly. All the sentences have been clustered together, so there's no breaks in sentences or paragraphs. And then we say, go learn. There are three things, really four, that a child has to have before the Rebbe is allowed to start teaching the Gemara. Number one, can he read the words? For which I really strongly encourage you, use Tuvius Shas. He's got Menukud, he's got the Nikud of all of the text of the Gemara, Surah Sadaf, and all of Rashi, and all of Tosfos, and on the side he has the Rashi Tevas. So if it says Tanu Rabbanan with a Tafresh in the middle of the text, on the side it'll tell you Tafresh means Tanu Rabbanan. Use a text that's Menukud. Any rabbi or Rosh Hashiva who tells you that's not the Masorah, just say kindly, With due respect, he's mistaken. He's very sorely mistaken. Not only is he mistaken, the first contract with the Catholic Church, who ruled the printing press for many centuries, first contract for the Shas Bavli required that they put in the Nikud and the punctuation. I can prove it to you. I haven't got my materials here to show you now. But not only that, Rabbi Chaim Ozer Grudzinski actually was menaked the whole of Masechet Gittin, and his intention was to publish the entire Shas Menuket. Sorry?
Blomberg in Venice,
I think
it was 1509?
1526, I think.
But that was
Samuel
Blomberg.
Yeah?
Who was a cat?
If you can look at almost any Shas Brachas, you will see that the first Mishnah and the first few lines of the Gemara, they started putting in the punctuation. Me'ein masai koren shema be'arvin, period. Mishasha kohanim nechnasim nechol b'trumatan, period. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, period. What are they doing there? You don't find any other Mishnayos. And do you know why? Because they began the contract, and after one Mishnah realized, whoa, we just started the punctuation, let alone the nikud. There's no way we're going to finish this. You know, typesetting every single letter, now you've got to put in the nikud is what's going to take forever. So they dropped that part of the contract. But the gedolim required of it for one simple reason. If the kids can't read the words, even if they understand it outside, they can't reconstruct it inside. And the purpose of teaching is for the child to become a mother, stand on his own, an independent link in the Masorah. So number one, can the kid read the text? Number two, can you get the child to write on top of each word any word he doesn't know the title of? Look up an art scroll. Don't learn Gemara from art scroll. You can't. It's a terrible crutch. It's not going to help really learning. It can help for a reference. Find Jastrow, wherever you want to go. If you don't know the meaning of that word, do you know the individual title of each word? So number one, read the words accurately. Number two, title the individual words. Number three, punctuate the text. Where does a comma belong? Where does a period? Where's a full stop? Where's a question mark? Where's a exclamation mark? Where's a quotation mark? Put it in the text. After you've got these three, reading accurately, and you can touch individual words, and you can punctuate it, now, can you make sense of these three things? Put it together and come up with poshup shat. What's the simple meaning? That's the starting point of Gemara. Now's where this, at number five, is where Gemara takes over. But the Rebbe, if he doesn't get the kids to do those four, it's the slow but fast way. Every child, I'm guaranteeing you, every child in the classroom, if he sees the Rebbe, wants to make sure every kid can read the text, punctuate it, translate the individual words, and now figure out yourselves, what does this one line mean? Is it a question? Is it an answer? Put it together, posh up shut. Then the Gemara begins. Number five, what question do you have? Ask the kids, what questions do you have on posh up shut? What other questions do you have? And then level six, what's your answer to your question? Guess what will happen? Guess what will happen when the kids start learning the next two lines? Guess what will happen? Why will they be excited? You know what they're going to discover? They had kashas which the Gemara will come up with. And when the Rebbe, and this will happen frequently, the child will come up with a question that Rashi has. What do you think is going to happen in the child's mind when the Rebbe says, oh my gosh, you have the same question as Rashi? Oh my gosh, I'm dialoguing with Rashi? And what happens if a kid has an answer to a question which Tosfos has? What are you doing with the kid's mind? He has a relationship with Tosfos. You see, watch this. I'll teach you the Gemara, say it back after me. Okay, children, I'm going to tell you outside what Rashi says, then I'm going to learn it inside. Here's Rashi's Kasha, here's Rashi's Teretz. Now let's learn it inside. What did I just do to the kid? Stopped him from thinking. But if you ask him, what questions do you have? And draw out, show them there's a problem. Why? Where's the problem? Please don't feel bad. If you have to go, you have to go. Brian, I love you. I'm going to see you. Yeah, if sooner, rush on, if not sooner. I mean, no, I'm also doing that. So get the children doing these four and then ask them, what questions do you have? What other questions? What's your answer? Guess what will happen? They'll start anticipating the next few lines, the Rashi, and even Rishonim. And now you're helping the children. You're putting them in the driver's seat. Don't put them in the passenger seat and tell them, watch how I drive. Put them in the driver's seat. Get them to put their foot on the pedal. Get them to experience the Gemara directly. And the children will realize, oh, I know what you're doing. You are giving me the baseline skills to be able to learn by myself. And if I carry on doing this, even though it's a slow but fast way, because it's laborious, but guess what? I'm really learning the words. I'm seeing where there's a break. Here's a period. Here's a question. Here's an exclamation mark. I'm learning how to learn. That is a fantastic way to help a child start building real skills in Gemara. Please feel free to call it a night. I'm happy to take any questions unofficially, but it's already the end. But if you have any questions, please feel free to come up. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And you're saying you've got to back up, so to speak, slow to go fast, or is it a little bit different on the maturity level, or is it, if he thinks he knows how to learn, because in some ways he does.
Right. What we have done, and it's very, 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 very sad, we've created a generation of learners who are able to turn up to a shiur, but not give it. And that is an avla. It's an avla because that's passive learning. And Torah is not passive learning. It's not turning up to a shiur. It's dialogue. It's participation. It's milchamta shel Torah. We're fighting it out together. So a magid shiur might not have the luxury of being able to do that. Maybe he can do it for 5 or 10 minutes at a time with one sugya and then move to continue with the rest of the Gemara the way he traditionally teaches. But really good Rebbeim do bring out the Gemara this way. It's not about how much ground I cover. You can have a separate shiur for that. I'm very big into Bikir. So I wrote a book on the subject called The 1 Minute Masmid. So I'm a very, very big proponent of covering ground. But in terms of what are we not doing for our children when we teach Gemara? And the answer is we're not necessarily giving them these four minimum requirements before they learn. And that is Shavuot Kol Nefesh, whether I'm 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. Is that answering your question? Okay. Any other questions, comments, criticism? Okay.
Thank you, Robert Reddy. Thank you. Thank you to every single one over here, every single person who came out. One thing that we all have in common over here, every single person in this room, is that we all truly care about education, and we took the time to come out and hear about how we could really deal with every child al pi darkei according to his own way. Even though every single child is unique, every single child is special, they each have their own way of learning things. Please feel free after this event, if you want, you could, any questions for Rabbi Reddy, for myself, you could look us up online at darkola.org, darkola.org, or our coaching service, which is learning coaching service, which is mastermindla.org. Thank you, everyone, for coming, and have a great evening. Take care.